Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
First, the list of men accused of sexual harassment and assault is growing daily, and they come from industries as diverse as movies and TV, to the media, to sports and politics. It can be very upsetting to find out that someone whose work you've admired is capable of those kinds of actions, and it can be hard to know what the right reaction is. Gayle King shared her thoughts and feelings about her CBS This Morning co-host Charlie Rose, who this week was accused of unwanted sexual advances towards several women over the years.
You know, I've enjoyed a friendship and a partnership with Charlie for the past 5 years. I've held him in such high regard, and I'm really struggling because what do you say when someone that you deeply care about has done something that is so horrible? How do you wrap your brain around that? I'm really grappling with that.
We asked Regan Gurung to help us sort through how we process new information about a person and where we go from there. He's the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and he joins us from our Green Bay studios. Regan, good to have you back with us.
Thanks, Judith.
As we said, there have been dozens of accusations in just the last weeks, and more come out every day. It does feel like, though, that the 2014 accusations that Bill Cosby had drugged and raped dozens of women during his career was the first time, recently at least, that the country as a whole dealt with a very different picture of someone they thought they knew. What kind of mental and emotional process does that trigger in us?
Well, there's just so much going on here to talk about, and I think probably the best place to start is looking at how we form impressions about other people in general. So psychological research looks at what's called person perception, and what we know is that, firstly, we form impressions of other people very quickly. And at one end of the spectrum, we can form an impression of somebody in as little as 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. So some of the earliest research showed that 5 seconds of even no audio, just watching somebody for 5 seconds, you form an impression of them. Now, this 5 seconds is important here because what research shows is that those impressions we form of somebody are extremely resistant to change. So when it's somebody like Bill Cosby, and, you know, many of us have watched many, many shows and, of his shows, and those first impressions are then built on, and that very first impression gets solidified, and the more that happens just goes towards reinforcing that picture we have at somebody. So that's partly why I think things get so disturbing when suddenly that worldview is shifted. And, you know, the clip that you played, that's a great example of here's somebody who worked with Charlie Rose for about 5 years or so and, you know, went on to say, look, when I played through all that in my head, I have all these things. It doesn't match with what I've just heard. So that's disturbing.
Well, and it's been really interesting, Regan, to see and hear how people have reacted to these recent sexual harassment and sexual assault allegations when they've first come out. If it's someone people like or admire, it seems like it's a wait-and-see approach. But if it's someone they didn't like or disagree with politically, for example, it's more of an I-knew-it approach. Is that an expected reaction, given what you said?
Oh, absolutely, because the dichotomy that you just sketched out, it is very easy when you hear something bad about somebody to go, yep, I told you so. And I think all of us walk around with a confirmation bias. We like to be right. So when we have an impression about somebody, when we believe something, we are actively looking for anything that will support that bias. You see that in politics. You see that in attitudes for a whole bunch of things. So when you hear this negative information about somebody, and if it is somebody you already didn't like, or more importantly, somebody that belongs to a group that you are not fond of, it is very easy for you to do very little work to say, yep, absolutely, totally knew that's the case. Look, that person, that entire group is not right. We act very, very differently if it is a member of a group that we care about. We act very differently if it's a member of our own group. Something referred to as the in-group, out-group bias. We are biased towards people in our own group. And our mental processes for how we think about individuals, how we think about transgressions of individuals in the in-group is very, very different from how we deal with transgressions from people in the out-group.
Do we tend to look at people who are more like us in whatever way that might be? Do we look at them more as individuals, whereas we look at people in the out-group as a group?
And that's an insightful point, because that's what happens in how we try and deal with the problem. So if it is somebody in our group, and we really try to say, well, it must be the situation. It's not them, it's the situation. So something really interesting that goes on is when, let's take something happening to us. If we trip or fall or do something wrong, our knee-jerk reaction is to say, you know what? It wasn't me. It was the situation that I was in. Mm-hmm. If it's somebody else, and this is called the actor-observer bias, for those of you keeping track of terminology, but this bias is if we are looking at somebody else, we are much more likely to say, oh, it's because of them. And this is strange, because if that same situation happened to us, we make a situational attribution, or we point to the situation. Yet if it's them, we make a more internal attribution. Say it's because of who they are as a person. And we see a variation of this with people who are in our group and people who are not in our group. So to just make that link, if it's somebody not in our group, we are very happy going, they are a bad person. If it's somebody in our group, one way we can make ourselves feel better is by saying, nope, it's not them, it's the situation that they were in. Mm-hmm. And that helps us feel better about those people. So it's a variation of, yes, we're looking at the individual, and it's specifically how we're looking at the individual that makes a difference.
Regan Gurung is a professor of human development and psychology at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And we're trying to sort through how human beings react to finding out negative things about someone that they thought they knew and who they respected or admired. And Regan, we have an interesting relationship with famous people, don't we? We feel like we know them
Absolutely.
Personally, even though we don't. And how does that affect how we process these types of allegations and facts?
Well, you know, this is interesting, because I think last year we did a show where we talked about people reading biographies. You know, why do people want to read celebrity biographies so much? And I think this is related. People read celebrity biographies because they want to know these celebrities. They want to be friends. And what seems to happen is the moment you believe that you know somebody well, even though you may have never met them, like a celebrity, automatically that overlap between you and them tends to fade. So it's almost like in your mind space, you and them are these overlapping circles of influence. When you think about them, you believe, oh, I know this person. When something happens to them, you can very easily empathize or sympathize and say, hey, what would it be if this was happening to me? So once we know somebody really well, like a celebrity, and that's why the Charlie Rose and co-workers case is slightly different, because they were people who knew each other. But with Bill Cosby, with some of the other celebrities, where even people who have never met them, if you feel like you know them really well, you almost internalize whatever's happening to them. And that makes you take a lot more personally what's going on, and really makes you look very closely at the, you know, what happened and why. And you want to explain that a lot more.
Especially with so many revelations coming out in such a short amount of time. You know, when we were talking about doing this segment, I sent you some ideas, and then I had to update it, and then I had to update
Right.
it, because new allegations and new situations are literally coming out, you know, every day. There seems to be a sense, I think, of waiting for the other shoe, or maybe it's the next shoe, to drop, because there's a good chance that others whom we admire are also guilty of some of these acts. We just don't know about it yet. What does that do for us emotionally and mentally?
Well, I think, you know, I think the big thing to think about is how do we cope with this kind of news. And, you know, I know that once upon a time, driving in a car with your kids and having NPR or WPR on was easy. It's a lot tougher these last couple of weeks because of the types of things that's on the news. So I think what we need to look at here is finally you're getting to see or some insight into things that have been going on that by virtue of many, many years of a flawed system finally is being unearthed. So, you know, when you think about how we're conditioned by the media, when you think about the history of social roles in America, I think a lot of the problems that we're seeing right now have existed for some time because of the way social roles were. Unfortunately, we live in a system where there is inequality, and we've made a lot of advances, but unfortunately, those advances aren't enough. And now you're seeing the results of that inequality. And you're right, it is that sense of, and I think for a lot of individuals, there's that balance between, yep, I know something more is going on, combined with maybe now there can be some changes at the social, structural, societal level that can be better for all of us in the long run.
Well, and as you were saying, Regan, there is certainly a history of gender inequality, not just in this country by any means, but I think also we're living in a time where news is spread at such a breakneck speed that we also know more about what's going on. And I think part of what I've been wrestling with is I'm guessing that a lot of the people from previous generations who we watch the movies, we watch the TV shows, we enjoy the music that they created many years ago, there are probably a large number of them who did some pretty horrible things and we just don't know about it.
Well, I think it's not just don't know about it, it's how some of these horrible things were even viewed at different time periods is not the same as we view them today. And I think that's really unfortunate because, you know, you can look at Mad Men, the TV show, you can look at next to any black and white movie, and you will see behaviors between men and women that are frowned upon today, but were acceptable for the most part back then. You know, in psychological research, there's something called the BEM Sex Roles Inventory. And this inventory was developed in 1974 and has a list of masculine terms and feminine terms. And for many years, that was, and to a large part is, the way to measure masculinity and femininity. And you just need to look at what are the items, what are the words used to represent male and female. And you see why men and women acted different, or you know, their behaviors were treated differently. And you can see why those masculine terms, in quotes masculine, were in some time periods more acceptable. Being more aggressive for men was more acceptable, but if you were a woman and you were aggressive, that was considered not feminine. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we can see that in the psychological literature where if you want to know, hey, have things changed? Here's the bad news. The BEM sex role inventory was developed in 1974. But when as recently as the last 10 years, the last 5 years, when people have said, oh, are these words still accurate? It must be different because we are so different now. Well, when you do research on it, most people still consider the same words, characteristics of men and characteristics of women. And that shows we may think we've made a lot of advances, but for the bulk, for the most of the folks out there, there's still a lot amongst us. We still at some level believe that masculinity and femininity is sort of how it was. And we've got some work to do.
We're talking with Regan Gurung about how we deal with news that people we admire have committed sexual harassment or sexual assault. Regan is a professor of human development and psychology at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a particular person who you admire who has committed sexual harassment or assault and the news has come out recently? How are you dealing with the information? Do you think you've processed news about perpetrators differently depending on how you felt about them before their behavior came to light? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our conversation about how we react to revelations that people we admire have committed despicable acts. Regan Gurung is helping us sort through the issue. He's a professor of human development and psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. What do you think? Can we separate an individual's actions from their work, whether it's movies, music, or their political career? And should we even try? Is there a particular case in this recent wave of sexual harassment and sexual assault cases that has hit you hard? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Regan, is there a risk that when we are bombarded by so many cases and in such a short amount of time that we almost get immune to it?
Well, I think how you cope with what you're bombarded with is the key. And I think different individuals use different strategies. So to answer your question, it can go one of two ways. We could get immune to it, but on the other hand, it could really lead to stress and depressed mood. When you keep hearing things that are uncomfortable over and over again, that's, you know, a very natural outcome is to feel depressed. And so how you cope with it, I think, is pretty important. And, you know, we have options. We can choose to not listen to the radio anymore and not talk about it. And I can tell you that for the most part, that form of repression or denial will only go so far. It'll help in the short term, but especially, as you said, every other week or day something else drops, we can't stay away from that forever. So coming up with a way to actually process how you're feeling, talking to a good friend about it, that's probably one of the best things we can do. I think in terms of immunity, sometimes we do habituate when the news is the same. This is slightly different because there are so many varieties or variations in what we're hearing. The question becomes, what are we as individuals going to do about it? And there's a range of things that I think every one of us has. You know, we talked about, and here in the studio, we were talking about, do you stop watching Kevin Spacey movies? Do you, you know, what do you do? And I think that's the question, is we all have options on how to process this, but we should come up with an adaptive way to process it so that we can cope better.
Let's go to the phones, and Dennis in Two Rivers is up first. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. Whether it's celebrities or people in my personal life, I kind of wonder, well, how can I trust them, but also how can I trust myself to accurately judge people then? Since I've been let down.
I think that's a great point, Dennis. And Regan, we haven't even touched on that. If we find out that these people that we don't know are doing these things and we had a certain impression, we look around at the people around us and think, I wonder if I'm wrong about any of these people.
Well, you know, absolutely. There's human beings are so complex, and personality varies so much. There are some of us who wear our personalities on our sleeves, or we're very easy to read. And there are, I think, some of us who you can know them for quite some time, and there are elements of them that you will never have run into. So I think it's remembering that there is a lot of variance. And I think Dennis's point is a good one. I mean, does this mean we look at every relationship we have? I think practicing good communication is important, and having good conversations or deep conversations with individuals is important, and that can help us get closer. But the bad news is, we as human beings are extremely good at keeping facets of who we are away from even close people if we want to.
Thanks for that call. Let's go back to the phones, and Rob in Oshkosh is up. Hi, Rob.
Hi. My comment is that we may have some difficulty in dealing with some of these news stories because we may have been a fan of a certain athlete or lauded the work of some actor. And when it comes out, then we sit there with egg on our red face, and we may also take it as a affront to our own intellect, that how could we have been sold this bill of goods? How could we, you know, have been duped by these people, because now we're embarrassed, you know, with the people around us, because we have been such a cheerleader for these people for such a long time.
So that's a great point, Rob. So Regan, if we associate ourselves with that person by saying, oh, I'm a huge fan of so-and-so, or, oh, you know, I've seen so-and-so in concert 10 times, then it almost feels like it's reflecting on us.
Right. And I think in situations like this, none of us like having different elements that don't sit well with each other. So the whole, I'm a good person, but I supported this person who's a bad person. I mean, those things are dissonant. They don't fit. And I think we have a choice. Our choice is we could either say, look, I was wrong, which is often tough to do, or we can say, look, that person did something wrong and face it. Sometimes what we do, and to make ourselves feel better in exactly what Rob, in the situation that Rob talked about, is instead of seeing what the person did as wrong, we instead twist it and make it seem not as bad so that we feel better for supporting that person in the first place. So we do all these little mental things to try and make ourselves feel better. And very often that comes to, making excuses for somebody who we are really close to, who we really supported, when in fact the better thing may be to just call a spade and say, you know, that's a problem. So I think, you know, yeah, that's definitely something to watch for.
Thanks for that call, Rob. And Regan, we're very short on time, but where do we go from here?
You know, I think far too often what you see in response to a situation like this is a phrase a colleague of mine shared, is far too often people are covering their behinds instead of dealing with people grabbing behinds. And I think we need to really face issues head on and put things, create the structures. And quite honestly, it starts with creating better support systems. The fact is, the society has been in a way where the structures don't allow women in particular to cope or deal with what's been done because of power, because of the male system. And that's a problem that...
And we'll have to leave it there, Regan. Thank you so much for joining us. Regan Gurung is a professor of human development and psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. He joined us to talk about how we deal with information that damages our image of people who we've admired in the past.